Today on Maine Calling, why some people are breaking up with their smartphone. 9 out of 10 Americans own a smartphone. For younger people, the numbers are even higher. More than 97% of adults under 49 own a smartphone. Many of us have come to depend on them, not only for communication, but also for many other things. We keep our calendar on our smartphones, use GPS, take pictures and videos, shop, order at restaurants, peruse social media, the list goes on. But smartphones can be addictive, and for an increasing number of people, not worth it. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with an author who said, enough, and got rid of his smartphone. He says it changed his life for the better. Are you addicted to your smartphone? Can you imagine breaking up with it? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For many people, it is the first thing we look at in the morning, the last thing we see before going to bed, and always by our side. And that is our smartphone. These pocket supercomputers can help us stay in touch with people, navigate to any destination, listen to our favorite music, and really just function in today's society. But do we rely too much on these devices? Well, my guest today will talk about this. Richard Simon is author of the new book, Unplug, How to Break Up with Your Phone and Reclaim Your Life. He's a former reporter and now directs website strategy for Georgetown Law. Also with us for the hour, Amy Wood, who is a psychologist, executive coach, and author. Her most recent book is Lawyer Like an Athlete. Well, Richard, welcome to Maine Calling, and Amy, welcome back.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me. This is great.
We invite you to join the conversation. Do you worry that you may spend too much time looking at your phone? Have you ever considered going back to maybe a flip phone or a not-so-smart device? Share your thoughts. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Well, welcome to both of you. I do need to mention right off the top that it's probably going to be really interesting having this conversation in Maine because there are big parts of Maine that don't have great cell service. And so this whole conversation is maybe mostly relevant to people who live places where there is great cell service or have great Wi-Fi. But that's still a lot of people. Richard, tell us your story. How did you decide to break up with your smartphone?
Yeah, so my smartphone was putting a strain on so many facets of my life, being a husband and father of three kids, having a busy job, just being involved in my community. Just there are so many different pieces of life that, you know, are complicated and, you know, take up a lot of time. And my smartphone, just like any other average American, I was spending hours on it every day. And I realized that there was just time I couldn't get back. So because of that, I tried all kinds of different hacks, different shortcuts to establish a more effective relationship with it. Many listeners have heard of some of these things: delete social media, turn your phone to grayscale, a digital Sabbath. And all these things are incredibly noble to do. But like so many people, I just wasn't working. So I realized I had to do something that was much more drastic, which was turn off my smartphone, which I did for an entire year. In my book, I don't recommend that. I recommend 60 days, not a whole year. I recommend 60 days to recalibrate the reward pathways in your brain. And that year without my smartphone was one of the most transformative periods of my life.
Well, you said you used the phrase recalibrate the pathways in your brain. Amy Wood, what does he mean by that? And what do we know about what smartphones in particular do to the pathways in your brain?
Well, they create an addiction. They literally hijack your brain, like any addiction, whether you're addicted to alcohol or food or TV or video games. It's the same thing. You know, what your brain does is when you you look at your phone and you check a text, and let's say it's a text you've been excited to get, you get a rush of this dopamine chemical, which creates really great feelings. You know, we all love to feel good. And the problem is it doesn't last. And so then you want another hit. You know, you start, you don't have a text, so maybe you check your email, or maybe you look at social media, or maybe you go search something and go down a rabbit hole trying to find some kind of reward that will give you that rush. Maybe it's a game you're playing on your phone, but you have to keep doing it. So a good way to describe it would be, you know, for me, if I have a bowl of chips in front of me, I can't stop, because with each chip, it's not so much about satiating my hunger. It's about, I love the feeling of eating that chip, but even more, it's the feeling of looking forward to the next chip and the next chip and the next chip, and you have to keep it going. That's why we get addicted to candy and junk food, and it's no different with a phone. It's just, I need another hit. I need another hit. Oh, wonder what the next hit's going to be. And that rewires the brain to rely on those hits rather than to rely on things that are actually sustainable, in terms of helping you feel good. You know, like exercise is a good example of that, or real conversation with a loved one, doing something you really enjoy, like a hobby you love, or, you know, reading a book that's really interesting to you. So that's what we mean, Richard and I, when we say it creates these pathways in your brain that make you reliant on these constant fixes to feel good.
It's tricky though, isn't it, Richard? Because in modern life, there are many ways in which not only do we personally depend on our smartphone, but also the places we go depend on us having a smartphone. We may go to a restaurant where you order using a QR code, you may order a concert ticket, your child's school may send out texts with updates about what color day it is on Spirit Week, or something more serious like an emergency. So it's really one thing to think about, okay, I really want to stem this behavior and get my life back. But then on the other hand, if all of society is operating under the assumption that I have a smartphone, this is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's absolutely integrated into the modern day economy. And I in my book, I'd never make the argument to not own a smartphone. In fact, today I still own a smartphone. But the key to ultimately turning off your smartphone, and I go through four different breakup styles in the book in terms of how to turn off your smartphone based on dozens of profiles and interviews that I did with people from all walks of life, from anesthesiologist to law partner to graphic designer to a pastor, all over the place. What I ultimately found, was that after you turn it off and you've reset the reward pathways in your brain, there are ways to effectively reintegrate it into your life. But for sure, during the period that you have it off, there are definitely challenges, and that's where preparation, like Amy knows, for any sort of detox is so key in terms of establishing a support group. But you'd be surprised in terms of the people that I profiled. I profile someone who lives in Denver, who's a huge Nuggets fan. He's a minister in Denver. And what did he do when he got off his smartphone? He printed out his receipt for buying his Denver Nuggets tickets. He goes to a customer service and they give him a physical ticket. I interview a couple who lives in Italy. And they use QR codes at so many of their restaurants. And they just said to the waitress, "Listen, we don't have, smartphones." They say, "Oh, sure, we'll give you a physical menu." So sometimes you really have to go out of your way to speak up for your values.
Amy, we are talking about smartphone addiction. You mentioned that this is similar to any other kind of addiction, and I'm wondering if there are some people who are more susceptible than others. And I'm thinking about how different people in my own family use our smartphones, that my husband can forget his for days on end, never got the addiction. But I know other people who couldn't imagine. And I know this is common for Americans, even going to the bathroom without their smartphone.
Well, I think that we are all susceptible to cell phone addiction, and many studies have been done to show that even if you're someone like your husband who forgets his cell phone or is really good about managing time with a cell phone, if you have that phone near you and it's on, let's say that I'll give you an example of one of the studies. They had people who didn't really care so much about their cell phone driving, and they placed a cell phone next to them and arranged for a text to come through and them to hear that alert. And every single person, even if they said they didn't care, they looked at the phone. That's how susceptible we all are. And as Richard said, there's all these ways that we have, like putting everything in grayscale on your phone so it's not that enticing. There's all these different apps we can use and we can delete things. But the truth is, the only way to really manage your phone and make sure it's not controlling you is to turn it off and put it away for certain periods of time.
And even if you don't have the alerts on, even if it's on silent.
Even if it's on silent, another thing to think about is that there is a direct correlation between people who have their cell phones in their bedroom at night and poor sleep. So even if you put your phone on the other side of your bedroom, it's off, you're not even thinking about the phone, your brain knows that an alert might come in and that phone is over there. And so you're sleeping kind of with one eye open, so to speak. And just in case that phone has something important for you that you need to look at.
I'm thinking of so many people who got rid of their alarm clocks because they don't need it
Yes.
anymore because they set their alarm on their phone.
Right. Well, yes. And that's an excuse I often hear when I tell people who come to me. I do a lot of coaching with leaders, and they're very busy people and they're having trouble sleeping at night. And I always ask them, do you have your phone in your bedroom? Because the latest statistics say like 80% of people have their phone in their nightstand and that it does interfere with sleep. And they'll all tell me, I do, but I have to have it for the alarm. And that's an excuse because we can all, just like we can all get a real menu at a restaurant, we can get the real ticket in our hand. We can also get an alarm clock. There's plenty for sale. We don't need our phone right there.
Richard, one of the things that strikes me is kind of ironic about all this is many of us believe that a smartphone makes us more efficient. We don't have to worry about keeping track of appointments because our phone will tell us when there's going to be an appointment. We don't need to look up directions when we're going to drive somewhere because our GPS will take us there. But you argue that this makes us anything but more efficient.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, just to set the stage in terms of where we are, because I talked to communications historians about this. There have been so many moral panics in the past from TV, radio, comic books, but what makes this moment that we're in so much different, so much more unique, is that the portability and amalgamation piece. And the amalgamation is so many tools wrapped into one, from music streaming to unfiltered internet, to phone, to texting, to finance, to health, social media. There's so many different triggers. And then the portability piece, the constant companion model of the phone, that it's always with us and always in our pocket. And what does that mean? It means never before in human history have we not been able to be alone with our thoughts, be experience solitude, embrace boredom. Now you might say to yourself, what's the big deal? I'm waiting in line at the grocery store for 2 minutes and I check my phone. Notice, even having those 2 minutes for your brain even to wander and to daydream. So in terms of the efficiency piece, at the end of this process, what I love seeing is that my book came out last month and I've already been getting emails from people who've been implementing strategies from it. What I love to hear is that I was spending 6 hours and 12 minutes on my phone per day. Now I'm spending an hour and a half on it. And when I look at my phone, I can tell you what that hour and a half was. For 45 minutes, I made a call to my parent. For 20 minutes, I used GPS. For 15 minutes, I listened to my favorite podcast versus looking at your phone in 6 hours and 12 minutes and saying, I just wasted my day.
Yeah, Richard, you talked about people who are contacting you, and I was just wondering whether or not someone does the 2 month detox. Just reading your book, I think, will make people, or even listening to this conversation, be more intentional about their cell phone use. And I'm going to ask you, is that enough?
Yeah, there's someone who sent me an email. He's an attorney in Massachusetts, and he said I'm not, he mentions one of the breakup styles, one of the four breakup styles in the book that he's embracing. He said, I'm not there quite yet. But he basically said, now when he gets home, and he said, he also has three kids, just like me. He said, when I get home, he said, I turn my phone off. I get home at 5:30 and I don't turn it back on until the next day in the workday at 9 in the morning. So now it's off for whatever, 14, 15 hours. He said, I am such a calmer person. I'm a better person. But even if you take less of an extreme, one of the first things I encourage people to do before going through a full detox is, and it might sound crazy to some listeners, go for a walk for 45 minutes to an hour without your smartphone. Leave it at home. Now, the first two or three times you do this is reported to me from people that I interviewed for the book, you might be freaking out inside. We're so accustomed, even just for walks, to have either earbuds or to be texting or having a conversation. We're just so uncomfortable with being alone with our own thoughts. But try it for 45 minutes to an hour. Don't take anything with you. Don't take a podcast. Don't have to do a phone call. Don't text, whatever it is. Leave it at home. And just instituting that ritual is something that is a great first step.
Amy, I can just hear some of your clients saying, but I need to be reachable.
Yes, they will often say that, and particularly attorneys. I work a lot with attorneys. Richard just mentioned one of them, and I know you work in the world of law, Richard. There's a belief among attorneys that if they aren't available 24 hours a day for a client, no matter what they're doing, if they don't answer that call when it comes through on their phone, they might lose the client. That client will go down the street. So many attorneys come to me for coaching, and one of the first things I ask them to do is set boundaries with their phone because the phone is literally running their lives with attorneys, I find. And it's terrifying to them. But what always happens is when they let go and they say, you know what, I'm going to set some boundaries. I'm going to, from the start, tell my clients, I'm available during these times. I'm not available after this time every day or whatever it is. But having hours that they're available when people know they can reach them. They're scared to death. All my clients are going to walk. And what always happens is the clients actually, at first they might be upset, put off by the new boundary, but after a while it helps them because they know, okay, this attorney is available Thursday afternoons, 2 to 4 to take calls. So I'll call then. And then it helps the attorney be much more organized. We talked a little bit before about do phones make people more efficient? And I agree with Richard, no, because when you're constantly looking to your phone for information that's supposed to make things happen faster, you're constantly distracted and you're not getting any real work done. You're not getting any productive thinking done because there's interference all the time. So what attorneys find and what many other professionals I work with find is that when they start to set these limits, not only do they feel more focused, but they start to have times when they're not distracted. They're able to think more clearly. One thing that the phone robs us of when we're constantly tethered to it is what it's like to be bored, what it's like to actually process thoughts, what it's like to have your intuition speak to you or to have a great idea come out of nowhere. So we look at phones like, oh, the phone is great because it has everything I need, but it takes away your capacity to think deeply, to process deeply, and all of that translates to mental health issues if you're not thinking clearly and you're not thinking deeply and processing emotions.
Well, we're talking about the radical idea of breaking up with your smartphone on main calling. What are your thoughts on this? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Main Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Has your smartphone taken over your life? Could you live without it? Joining me today, psychologist Amy Wood and Richard Simon, who is the author of the new book, Unplug, where he coaches people to have a smartphone detox, different ways to do so. We invite you to join the conversation. Lots of calls coming in. You could try to get through 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org or comment on social media. Richard, speaking of social media, that is part of this conversation, but it is not the conversation, right? It is something about this device that can you can hold in your hand that is particularly nefarious, correct?
Yeah, I mean, so many people who I interviewed in the book, similar to me, deleted social media apps from their phone, which I think is a very, very healthy thing to do in general. But there are so many other addictive aspects of the phone that exist. I mean, think about pre-smartphone. The first smartphone came out in 2007. But what was the most dominant phone pre-2007? It was the BlackBerry, also known as the CrackBerry. The BlackBerry didn't do much. I mean, it was essentially just like emails and calls and texting. But just even adding email to a phone, people were on it all the time. You know, 2006, there were studies being done about teens and texting. So even if someone were to move even to a basic phone, and I learned this from a lot of the interviews that I did for the book, there still has to be an element of intentionality. So yes, even by removing social media, there are so many other addictive aspects of the smartphone because it really is like a mini computer.
Amy, are there places in our life, age ranges in which we're particularly susceptible? I'm thinking about are teenagers even more susceptible to addiction than adults when it comes to smartphones, or any other group for that matter?
I think all generations, every age group is susceptible to addiction with a smartphone. And the reason for that is because of what Richard just said. It's a mini computer, and a mini computer can do a whole lot of things that you might get addicted to. But in terms of just using the phone to communicate, I think that teenagers are definitely most at risk for that kind of addiction because when you're a teenager, that is your world. Connecting with other people your age, peer connection. And it's really important for development to be connected to your peers. So it's good in a way, you know, that teenagers are using the phone for that, but they're using it too much. There needs to be mixed in with that phone use to connect real face-to-face connection. That's what teenagers are missing. And there's also a lot of pressure related to the phone for a teenager. I had a teenager describe it to me as it feels like the whole world is in my pocket. You know, I've got to answer to the whole world. There's all these things that I'm supposed to do. I can be reached at any time. I can never be alone and have privacy. So just like with all different age groups, the challenge is to use the phone as a teenager for what it brings, because there's a lot of benefits to it. We're not saying phones are bad. They're only bad if the phone is controlling you. And narrow it down to what it helps you with and how it does entertain you and how it does help you accomplish goals, et cetera, how it makes you happy and adds to your life, and then get rid of the rest. That's really the formula. As I said, every age group can be addicted, and it could be, you know, you're a 70-year-old and you're addicted to your phone, not so much because you love to text, but maybe you're playing games all day, you know, or maybe you're shopping on your phone. You're a 50-year-old who uses all their break time at work to go on Amazon and order things. You know, there's so many ways that you can use your phone. I'd say the biggest danger right now is news addiction, particularly with all the turmoil that's going on with our government. People are constantly checking their phones and getting news alerts, and media they're getting much better at making us want to check our phone. They're trying to come up with more and more sensational headlines that they can use in the news alerts to make you stop whatever you're doing and say, oh my gosh, there's breaking news. 24 hours a day, this is happening. So you can get addicted for all kinds of reasons.
And Richard, the point about teenagers and what Amy says about how they're able to express their relationship with smartphones. One of the ironies here is that it's the younger generations, Gen Zs and even younger, who are thinking really intentionally about their cell phone use, their smartphone use, and they are leading the trend to get flip phones, right?
Yeah, there is a trend among Gen Z to simplify and to move over towards basic phones. I mean, it's been very encouraging to see. I mean, unfortunately for folks right now who are like seventh grade and above, they drew the short end of the straw. And what I mean by that is that, schools and parents just willingly said, fine to have smartphones. And they use them, their social circles, everyone used them. And as a result, getting them off is incredibly tricky and it's a very delicate situation. If you have a lower schooler or younger, you're in a fantastic position because you will find other parents who align with you in terms of understanding how dangerous smartphones are. And you can find people, there are healthy tech pledges. Schools are now on board across the country in terms of bell-to-bell phone bans. So, I mean, you have that opportunity. Whereas if you're in high school or if you're in college and even a little bit older in terms of your 20s, this is literally everything. You got your smartphone probably in third or fourth grade, and getting off of it is much more challenging. But I think a lot of people in Gen Z just have had enough. And there are still, every single month, Nokia reports hundreds of thousands of these basic phones that you can buy for less than $100 at a Best Buy or even $20 at a Target that just have the bare bones requirements, calls and texting. And that's where you see Gen Z mobilizing and saying within their social circles, enough is enough. Let's go to a more basic way of
And a lot of
communicating.
these young people are also buying vinyl records and typewriters, which is so interesting. We're going to go to Kitsy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kitsy, go ahead.
Hi, Jen. I think I must be the only person on the earth who still does not have a smartphone. And part of the reason is it goes back to when I was serving in a congregation in Vermont. And one of my parishioners, and this was well before this, but he worked on computers all day long. That was his job. And he decided when it was possible to get a home computer, he would get a home computer. And the next day he called me and he said, I got on the home computer, and next thing I knew, it was 5 o'clock in the morning. And that served as a warning long before cell phone, smartphones came on. Because I think I may have a predilection to addiction. I'm not addicted to anything. I mean, never alcohol or anything like that. But I think that I am so easily overwhelmed, and I do not want to be overwhelmed. So
Well,
I
Kitsy,
am.
yeah, thank you so much for calling. And just for the record, we have other people emailing and calling who do not have smartphones, so you are not the only one. But Kitsy, I know you. I know that you're a curious person, and I suspect that you would love being able to look things up at a moment's notice if you had one. So good for you. Richard, thoughts about what Kitsy has to say?
I mean, her experience with someone in her congregation who was just using it all day, and then all of a sudden it's whatever 5 in the morning. I mean, yeah, that's one of the key wake-up calls for so many of the people that I interviewed in the book. It could be losing relationships, whether it be a spouse or a girlfriend or a boyfriend. It could be losing a job. For one person I interviewed who's in Nairobi, Kenya, it was clinical depression. I mean, this is something that each person has their moment, and this is something that is certainly serious. We don't want to like minimize it by saying, oh, it could be like someone's playing a mobile game too much. Well, you might be playing a mobile game till 5 in the morning. It could be affecting every aspect of your life. I think that observation of what she saw is true. I mean, I like what Amy said that pretty much everybody is susceptible to an addiction. I interviewed dozens of people, and it was interesting. Each person said they had an addictive personality at one point or the other in the interview. And I had to tell them at the end, each person, like, just so you know, everyone else is telling me they have an addictive personality too. So, yeah, I think that's a very, very powerful insight is that she saw this experience. She saw someone who clearly had an addiction to the computer. And she said, you know what? I just don't want to touch that. So, I think it's very powerful.
Kitsy, thank you for calling in. We'll go up to Augusta and Addie. Hi, Addie, go ahead.
Hi. I was calling because I, have pretty much average smartphone use. youth. I'm, you know, mid-30s, and I've discovered that I enjoy having a puzzle out, like, on my table, and that kind of takes over if I have any, like, you know, 10 minutes or in between time that I would be looking at my phone, that I enjoy, you know, kind of getting that. I mean, maybe it's switching one thing for another, but getting that dopamine hit, but it's a little more of a process to get that, and it's more satisfying, and it kind of just, you know, limits the in-between time, and sometimes I enjoy just, you know, doing it longer and not being on my phone.
Addie, thank you so much. Richard, what do you think of Addie's hack?
So something that Addie brings up, which I think is a really good point, and something that Amy brought up earlier in terms of the bedroom, is, you know, one of the strategies I mentioned in the book to allow for a more successful detox is to optimize your home environment. So what do I mean by that? It means phones do not come into the kitchen or the dining room, because that signals to your brain it's a place where you eat, just like you don't bring phones or devices into the bedroom, because that signals to your brain it's a place for sleep. Just like phones and devices don't come into your den, because that signals to your brain this is a place for high quality leisure, things like puzzles. It's really important that, even if it's not a phone, it could be a TV, it could be an iPad, whatever it is, keep it in one room in the house and make it so that there's some friction, so that if you're in the bedroom, you think to yourself, oh wait, I forgot to check that one stock. It means you have to go down the steps or go to the other part of the house. You have to turn on your computer or whatever it is and then look at it, because all of a sudden your brain's going to say, ah, you know what? It's just not worth it. If you don't optimize your home environment successfully and you're trying to establish a more effective relationship with your smartphone, you're likely going to fail or find another high dopamine replacement activity like a computer to fill in that time. So what Addie's mentioning in terms of the puzzle is, I think, a very good insight.
And Amy, this is similar to your, you know, don't have that bag of chips in front of you if you want to stop eating chips.
Yes, it is. And I think what we're also hearing here from Addie is really part of how do you recover from an addiction. You know, you can't just say, okay, no more smartphone. You have to set yourself up for success by designing your home in a way that discourages phone use to a point where you're not feeling tethered to it. And you also have to think of, what are my replacement activities going to be? You know, so you might think, you know, okay, I have this urge right now to look at my phone. You have a list in front of you of maybe 5 or 6 things you might do instead. You know, maybe I'll go play with my dog instead, or maybe I'll go cook a good meal for my family, or maybe I'll go read for a little bit. Water the plants, you know, so that you're not stuck there wondering what can I do? And then the more you go to that list, the more you get into a habit of doing more healthy things that will bring you a more sustainable feeling of well-being.
And just don't be, when you're cooking that meal, reading the recipe off your smartphone, right?
Yes, right.
Here's an email from April, and I actually think this is a really important point. A few years ago, a friend fell down a flight of stairs. When he came to, he was able to call 911. As an older person who lives alone, I finally learned to keep my cell phone with me. I leave it in my back pocket for my safety. And Richard, in your book, you do talk about there are people for whom it is a great idea to have a smartphone, and it is their real reasons to intentionally have a smartphone with you.
Yeah, absolutely. In the book, I talk about two different examples through profiles of where a smartphone is really an important device. One I bring up is someone who went through a smartphone detox in his 40s. He was adamant his kids weren't going to have them. And then 2 years later, I reconnected with him. He lives in Massachusetts. And he said, actually, now I have a smartphone. My son has 2 smartphones and my daughter has a smartphone. And I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, my son was diagnosed with diabetes, type 2 diabetes. And literally the smartphone allows us, me and my wife, to be able to control his insulin levels. And it's become such a powerful device for us. But an important insight there is, he said, I don't use my smartphone like everyone else. He said, during lunchtime hours, we know when to control it. But he said, when I pick up my daughter and son from school, I turn it off when we're in person because, like, I'm with them now and I know what's going on with their health. And he said, if I didn't go through a detox, I wouldn't have been able to do that. And then I also bring up a case study with St. Jude Children's Hospital. That, unfortunately, for children and teens, they can get really scary diagnoses in terms of leukemia and other terrible illnesses. And I spoke to a counselor who supports some of these awful cases in some of those terrible situations. And she said, you know what? One of the first things we do is that we don't take the smartphone away. And she said, like, literally, because the smartphone is built into these teenagers, their lives, if we would remove the smartphone and social media from their environment, this is how they connect with other people. So those are just two examples of cases where, like, a smartphone is required. And I'll just mention one other thing is that we mentioned earlier about how integrated the smartphone is into the modern day economy. This is the most extreme case imaginable, but I profile an on-call anesthesiologist at Johns Hopkins Hospital, where he is literally saving lives. And he has a work smartphone for work, but how does he make it so that he's able to have an effective relationship with it? He leaves it plugged in at the hospital. So how does that work? He's an on-call anesthesiologist. How does he manage? He doesn't have a two-way pager. No, the hospital has allowed him to have a one-way pager. He's like, why would I want that craziness to follow me when I'm at home? He said, I don't want the craziness of my smartphone and everything that it brings with it from the hospital. No, when I'm on call, I just want to have the pager. And that's just an example of, okay, for some people, a smartphone might be an absolute requirement, but it doesn't have to rule your life.
Amy.
And I just want to comment, Richard. I love what you said about it's about a relationship you're having with your phone. We all have a unique relationship with our phone. And the important thing is to design that relationship so that it really works to improve your work and improve your life because the phone can do that. But you have to spend some time thinking about it and really asking some deep questions. One example of this might be, I typically ask about smartphone use when I first meet with a coaching client. And a lot of times when I ask them, how do you use your phone? And they'll say, well, I love at the end of a long day of work to just scroll through social media. It's a great way, a really easy way to stay connected and makes me feel good. And I'll say, well, think about that. Does it really make you feel good? Well, actually, no, it's kind of a downer, because I start comparing myself to other people and then it wakes me up when I'm trying to wind down. And that's from thinking about it more than a person normally would. So really, I think the key here for people listening is to ask yourself about every aspect of your phone and does it really help me? And do I really need this because it brings me joy and or it serves a really important purpose? And design your phone use, design your relationship with your phone around that and let the rest go.
Well, we are going to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our show today is about our attachment to our smartphones. And I should say most of us, because I know there are those of you in our audience, we're hearing from you who do not have a smartphone. We're also talking about what it might take to reduce your use. Joining me, Richard Simon, who is author of Unplug, a new book, Unplug, How to Break Up with Your Phone and Reclaim Your Life. And psychologist Amy Wood. You can share your comments and questions if you're quick by email, talk@mainpublic.org or call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Going to Carol calling from Portland. Hi, Carol, go ahead.
Hi there. I am one of those calling you on my flip phone, and I've been on the planet 1 or 2 years, so that's probably understandable to some of you. I'm also visually impaired, and so I'm at the point with my current phone that I happen to use just for phoning. I don't text, and that is really it. I do use it for an alarm when I plug it in, but my question is, where is there a good replacement for my flip phone? Because I do not want to buy a smartphone. And there are a lot of other ways to do things, talk to people, and do many things without a smartphone. and I'd love to have you spend some time talking about that.
Yeah,
I
thank
do go
you,
to
Carol.
A bank. I do all kinds of things like that. So.
Our guests today are not tech experts, but I suspect Richard has some ideas for you. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, there are lots of good basic phone alternatives, especially with a visual impairment. Something I go through a whole chart in my book Unplug in terms of different options, but something I would encourage you to try is there is a wonderful resource. His name is Jose Briones, and he has a dumb phone finder where he ranks and rates hundreds of basic phone options from some of the more well-known ones like the Lite Phone or the Mudita Compact to more basic phones like the Cat S22 Flip or the Kyocera Dura Extreme XV Plus. All of these have different functions. All of these have different advantages and disadvantages in terms of living a more intentional life. It can be as basic as a $20 Alcatel Flip or as sophisticated as a Lite Phone 3 that is $600. So there are lots of options out there. Once again, it's a Dumb Phone Finder by Jose Briones. And there's hundreds of basic phones that he ranks and gives ratings to. And I think it's been a wonderful resource for me to share with people who've read my book.
Well, thank you, Richard. And Carol, I'm wondering also if here in Maine, the Iris Network might have some ideas for you. I'm sure that many of the people that use the Iris Network have ideas about where you might be able to find something very helpful to you. We're going to move on. We're going to go to George calling from the Moosehead Lake area. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Hey, folks. What a great show. I think social norms are something that really will need to change. My pet peeve is at concerts with people filming and the bright light shining back at me. And just wanted to reiterate that, yes, go to the box office, get a paper ticket, put it in your drawer as a memoir.
You know, it's funny, George, that you say that because, Richard, you talk about this in your book that even some big performers are sort of tired of cell phones at their concerts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, now if you go to comedy shows, go to comedy clubs, so many use Yonder pouches. I mean, the way it basically operates is you go into the venue and you literally put your smartphone into a locker. They don't allow smartphones into the venue. In fact, if they would see you with a smartphone in the club, you would be physically removed from the premises. And so too, in terms of concerts, yeah, but many people know White Stripes lead singer Jack White, who for years lived without any phone at all. If you go to a Jack White show, I mean, he doesn't allow smartphones into a show either. He uses Yonder pouches also, where you literally have to put your phone into a bag and then you can't unlock it until you leave the venue. So yeah, I think it's a great point. I mean, if you go to a baseball game, a football game, whatever it is, look around. Majority of people are half there, half not.
Yeah. Thanks, George, for that your call. We'll go up to VZ and Jane. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I'm 78 now, and when I was 77, I was pushing a very heavy wheelbarrow full of firewood over a door lintel, and it attacked me, and I fell on my back and crushed the 12th thoracic vertebrae of my spine. And if I had not had my telephone on me and been able to dig it out and call my son-in-law, I don't know how long I would have had to lie there before someone would have noticed me lying there on the January ice. So I carry my iPhone all the time. However, speaking up for people like recovering alcoholics like me, let me just put in a plug for not being a slave to your phone. And everyone who knows me knows that I do not do rapid instant reply to a text, and I do not necessarily answer my phone when it rings. I have voicemail. And so that has freed me to use it when I want to use it, the way I want to use it, turn the ringer off when I want to turn the ringer off. And it's just, I can enjoy this very valuable and for me, somewhat essential tool without being a slave to it. So thank you very much. And thanks,
Jane,
for the
thanks
show.
For
you
your
have
call.
An endless, you You have an endless pile of ideas. It just astounds me. This is a great one. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much. And Amy, I'm listening to Jane and I'm thinking a lot of people would like to be where Jane is.
Yes.
Where she is not, as she used the phrase slave, not a slave to my cell phone, my smartphone, but it's a tool for me. That's harder than it sounds, isn't it?
It is. It's a lot harder, but it starts with really being self-aware and asking yourself some tough questions. What I would recommend if anyone listening really wants to use their phone less, sit down and use an old-fashioned pen and a piece of paper and write down, what are all the ways I'm currently using my phone? And then ask, what are the current ways that I'm using my phone that are actually helping me to be happy and or productive? What are the ways I want to keep using my phone? How do I want to redesign that relationship? Again, Richard used the word intentional. And I love that word because intentional is an empowering word. We can intend and we can follow through on what we intend because we're in charge of the phone. The phone is a tool that we can use. And again, it's an amazing thing. It's a mini computer. It can do wonderful things to make our life better and to help us work better and all sorts of other things. But we've got to take the time to really think it through. And sometimes we have to redesign our relationship. So many of us, for example, as we get older, we realize it is a really good idea. Even if I don't like having my phone with me, I should have it for safety reasons. So then you've got to learn, okay, how can I have the phone with me and not become too dependent on it?
Yeah. And Richard, another thing Jane said, I think is really important that she communicates with other people in her life, how she uses her phone. So people aren't sending her a text and thinking Jane didn't get back to me. Is she ignoring me? Is she mad at me?
Right.
That you have to communicate your way through this process.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I talked about in the book, one of the strategies is just be transparent. You know, you're the exception. Yeah, I profile in that section he's actually running for governor of California. He's a former Fox News host who literally has interviewed presidents in the Rose Garden. He's like he knows like everyone. He's like, his network is huge and doesn't have a smartphone. But so how does he communicate if he's late for something or he's missed his flight or whatever it is? And he said, recognize you're the exception and be transparent with people. Tell the producer of whatever show, tell the senior aide of the president, hey, just let you know, if you want to get in touch with me after this time, after 9 o'clock, after I leave my hotel, there's no way to get in touch with me. Make sure you're transparent throughout this process that everyone knows that you're operating on a different wavelength than everyone else.
All right, Jane, thank you so much for your call. We have so many calls coming in, so little time. We're going to go to Jim in York. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'll make it fast. I have a statement to see if your guest has a response. I have sort of a double whammy, if you will, because I'm a small business owner since 1984. And obviously in the advent of computers, I actually use my smartphone. 75 to 80% of my usage is business. So we live and die. I use the phone as a computer, and I'm on and off the road. So I can't and don't want to put it down at times, of course, because of the business.
Yeah, I'm so glad you called, Jim. And, you know, we're having this conversation in Maine, which has one of the highest percentages, if not the highest percentage, of single proprietor businesses, where there are a lot of you out there. Richard, go ahead. Thoughts for Jim.
Yeah, so for many in business, a smartphone is absolutely required, similar to the on-call anesthesiologist, the social media strategist, the small business owner. What I would say is, especially if you're going through a detox in my book, the 60-day detox, is separate your professional digital footprint from your personal digital footprint. So if you are a small business owner and your shop and your hours, whatever, 8 to 4, 8 to 6, whatever it is, okay, so during that time, you have a separate phone number that is your professional smartphone. It's a separate device and is just for professional purposes. When you're done with work and you're done with the day, whatever it might be, whether it's one call anesthesiologist, a small business owner, whatever it is, you turn it off and you separate your professional pursuits from your personal. So that when you get home, the smartphone either stays at the small business or it's with you at home, but it's turned off. I think that is really the most effective way of doing it, is separating the two.
Jim, I'm so glad you called. Amy, just a little bit of time left. Anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think the important thing here, I agree. You have to be in charge. You have to judiciously be managing your phone use so that you don't get overwhelmed. you know, what's really interesting to me is that right now, studies show that most adults are checking their phone anytime, any amount between 58 and 205 times a day. And that number is going up all the time as phones are increasingly designed to be more appealing. So we have to get better at this. And now is the time, because what is also going up in correlation with increased phone use is rates of depression, rates of anxiety, and rates of sleep disorders.
All right.
So think about that and let that motivate you.
That's a good motivation. Well, I appreciate both of you. I want to apologize to all the calls and emails I was not able to get to today. Very popular topic, obviously. Amy Wood, mm-hmm. the voice you just heard, a psychologist, executive coach, and author. Her most recent book, Lawyer Like an Athlete. And Richard Simon, the author of the new book, Unplug, How to Break Up with Your Phone and Reclaim Your Life. Today's sound engineer was Chris Bridges. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, a tour of some of the art exhibits and public art in Maine this summer. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.